All right. Stand by here in just about 2 minutes. 2 minutes. The great John Lear will join us for an in-depth discussion of everything you ever wanted to know about aviation, some stuff about space, and none of it is normal. We like it like that on Coast to Coast AM. Well, John Lear, as you may know, is a retired airline captain, a former CIA pilot, as well as the son of the famous inventor of the Lear jet. And I think the eight-track tape player, and I heard the automatic direction finder for aircraft, but we'll get into that later. I may be wrong, but probably not. He's a Lockheed L-1011 captain, and he is very highly regarded in aviation circles. He's flown over 150 test aircraft, not normal aircraft, test aircraft. He's won every award granted by the Federal Aviation Administration. He also holds 18 world speed records and has worked for 28 different aircraft corporations. During the late 1980s and early 1990s, John began coming forward with some startling revelations concerning the subject of aerial phenomena and those things known as UFOs. Welcome onto the bridge, John Lear. It's been a long time. I've been listening to you and wanting to speak with you in person.
Well, thank you, John. It's nice to be here.
Well, you know, you and I did not, we didn't speak on the telephone before. Sometimes I do and sometimes I don't. I just thought this would be a very interesting interview to just kind of do it cold. We'll get to know each other in front of a few million of our friends.
Absolutely.
John, you've had a remarkable career, just a remarkable history. And I'm curious, and this is probably intrusive, invasive, and indiscreet, but it's like, how is it that you're still on this side of the green with all the stuff that you know? And all the stuff that you've done, flying for the CIA and everybody else, it seems like some of the things you've discovered and researched and then exposed to the public are borderline dangerous.
I'm protected.
Okay. Enough said. Well, I saw your affidavit that you had that you'd submitted regarding the 9/11 thing. Do you mind if we touch on that for a couple of minutes?
No, great. I'd like to get that sorted out.
Well, here's the thing. My take on your affidavit was like it was totally impossible that this thing happened the way it's been told to the public at large, from the inability to get the aircraft to that speed, the inability to hit a target that's that size at that speed, if you could get it to that speed, and stuff like that. And I understand that. Are you the head of the pilots for 9/11 Truth?
No, I'm just a core member.
Okay,
and
gotcha.
You know what the problem with the 9/11 World Trade Center airplanes is? We're talking about just a normal commercial pilot with not a great deal of experience getting in a Boeing 767 cockpit with the new EFIS system. And they were 90 miles away at 30,000 feet, and he's got to navigate back to New York, and then he's got to make this perfect descent to arrive at the center of the World Trade Center, 208 feet wide, and hit a dead center. It's just impossible. It's not almost impossible. It is impossible.
Okay. I didn't see a lot of aircraft wreckage outside the Pentagon.
No, the Pentagon was a flyby, and I suspect that Chick Burlingame was at the controls, and he was working with Cheney on the exact program of terrorist attack on the Pentagon, and the witnesses that pilots for Truth have. Saw the airplane come by the gas station, and then some of them didn't see what happened to it after that. None of them saw it crash into the Pentagon, and one of them saw it go over it and beyond. It probably went over and landed at Andrews Air Force Base, which is just a few miles beyond over the Potomac. But there was no wreckage there. April Gallup, who was sitting 40 feet from where the blast went off. She was sitting there. She's Army intelligence. And she happened to have her six-month-old son sitting below her desk in his car seat. Now, she had normally taken him to where they, you know, take care of the kids when the moms go to work there at the Pentagon. But they told her at the door, no, go ahead and take him on in. So she had him there, and when the blast went off, she saw no airplanes, no missiles, no drones, smelled no gasoline. She did smell explosives, cordite, but no kerosene, no jet fuel, no nothing like that. And she picked up her six-month-old son, put him on her shoulder, and crawled out that hole in the Pentagon and out to the grass where triage was taking place. And she eventually ended up in the hospital, where Army intelligence showed up later and started telling her that she saw a plane. And she said, no, I didn't see a plane. And she said, yes, I did. And she said, no, I didn't. And that's been an ongoing argument between her and Army intelligence. She's been in a lot of problems since then. It's too bad she has to take the rap for this.
And what's her name?
April Gallop, G-A-L-L-O-P.
That's very interesting. Well,
you can Google her, and she's a very interesting woman. I've seen a couple interviews that she's done, but no, there was no airplane that went into the Pentagon, and no bodies, no nothing like that. And if there was, why wouldn't we, of all the 158 cameras around, why can't we just see one picture? Just show me one picture of a Boeing 760 or 757 in that case, making that descent, and a perfect descent, and flying at 1 foot across the grass and hitting the Pentagon. It did not happen. It's ridiculous.
It is ridiculous, and in fact, a couple of congressmen have finally gotten with the program, and they're asking about the Saudi connection. Do you have any insight on that?
No, I don't.
That's what I like about a pilot. He'll just tell you if he doesn't know.
Yeah.
You know, there's nothing worse than trying to bluff your way through it. Well, now, I just did a little news story a while ago about these increased radiation levels from the Fukushima disaster over there. And, you know, of course, I was supplied with some notes about some various things that we could talk about, and I wondered if you would like to begin there.
Sure. People are under the impression that there was a 9.0 earthquake over there that triggered the tsunami. And if you look at any of the videotapes, you'll see that all of the high buildings, multi-story buildings, are standing. All of the towers are standing. Anything with a spire is still standing. There was no 9.0 earthquake. What it was an atomic bomb set off about 50 miles to the northeast in the ocean to create the tsunami. And the reason that was done is because Mossad had found out that the Japanese were secretly selling high-grade plutonium to Iran, and this was the payback. And Israel had just gotten the contract to run the security for all 52 nuclear reactors there in Japan. And what they did is, after they set off the atomic bomb, they set all the controls so that none of the emergency systems would work. And so that put Japan in a real problem. And, you know, who knows how far-reaching that problem is.
Well, as long as we're talking about Iran, is it your opinion that we're going to go forward with the conflict with them?
You know, I don't know, but there's one interesting thing that not many people know about. We have built, the Navy has built, a couple of destroyers, or battleships, I mean, that are completely remote controlled. There's not one single person on them. What they do is they, for all these computers and controls that run the battleship, there's a place on the back, a fantail, where a helicopter can land, and there's nine computer programmers that can land a helicopter and go and fix anything that goes wrong. And then they take off, and then this thing can go anywhere guided by satellites. And, you know, what I would think that we'd use it for is to sail it out in through the Straits of Hormuz and provoke an attack where Iran bombs it. And then we say, oh, all our poor Americans are dead. 600 Americans are dead. We're going to retaliate, you know. And then, you know, where in fact nobody's dead. It was just a remote control battleship. And that would, you know, provoke the fight. Now, whether that's going to happen or not, I don't know. But that battleship is certainly in production, and they've made three or four of them.
Lytton Ingalls, I guess, again, maybe. remote control. So bouncing back to 9/11 here, do you think those aircraft were remote control? Because, I mean, there seems to have been a noticeable absence of any people who were related to any of the passengers that may or may not have been on that those aircraft.
Yeah, there's a couple books out. One is called No Passengers on 9/11, and it it talks about trying to find any evidence of through driver's licenses and the Social Security Index and passports of the passengers that were on there. And they're only able to account for a very low percentage of the passengers that are alleged to have been on those airplanes. Now, in the case of Flight 93, we know that that landed in Cleveland, and we know that the passengers deplaned and went into the NASA hangar there, and then that airplane took off. We know that Flight 11, American Flight 11 and American Flight 77, never departed anywhere, according to the Bureau of Transportation Statistics. There's no record of them ever taking off. So that just leaves 93 and 175 to have possibly done anything or, you know, taken off and gone someplace. But there were certainly no airplanes involved in any crashes. World Trade Center 1 and 2, we've talked about that. No wreckage of any kind. And then Shanksville. Of course, what happened here is the interesting thing that happened here is there were supposed to be four simulated crashes, and Flight 93 was the one that was supposed to crash into building number 7. But something went wrong between 10:30 and 11 o'clock that prevented them from simulating either by video fakery or by holograms of this airplane crashing into the world, into the building number 7, and they had to fake it going somewhere else. So in the 6 hours between 11 o'clock and 5 p.m., when they let the reporters into Shanksville, they had to hurry up with a fake a crash scene. And they got this little ditch there about 40 feet long, and they had a backhoe there, and they had men standing around in the hazmat suits, but that's all there was. There was no wreckage. I think I saw one little, it could have been either a brake or a turbine, but that was in the bucket of the backhoe, and we never saw how it got there. We didn't see him dig it out of the ground. It just, the camera panned over, and it showed it while it was in the bucket. So there's no possibility an airplane the size of a Boeing 757 could have gone into and crashed in that place at Shanksville. Absolutely none. There would be some wreckage, either tail. You know, that's why they put the flight recorder and the cockpit voice recorder in the tails, because that always survives the accident. But as far as disappearing into the ground, didn't happen, could not happen.
You know, it's interesting. You would think that there'd be a wall with all these people's names on it somewhere.
Yeah.
There is.
Yeah, it'd be too tough. Some people might start trying to find out, find out the identity and the provenance of these, each and every one, where they work, you know, driver's license number, social security number, whether or not they applied for the disaster relief, the social security index. So they wouldn't. They have, you know, done nothing as far as providing that information. It was a mess up. They didn't plan it fully. And whoever they are, there had to be a small group because they didn't want any leaks. But this small group didn't apparently have the brains to carry this off and to plan it so that nobody would figure it out.
Well, it's interesting. Like in the case of Building 7, first you say in one video, you see a little penthouse, just a smaller building on top.
Yeah.
And then another one, you don't see it. It's gone.
And that's interesting. I didn't notice that. I'm going to look at that next time.
It's really kind of obvious. NIST's version is there's no little, it's just a small little penthouse. It's almost like a utility building on the roof. And you can see it there. Well, because of the way the thing imploded, it went down first. So they just picked up their video after it had disappeared from view and then went, okay, here it is coming down. It's just like, wow. When you see both videos. I mean, it's just undeniable. I've been around video production people for a long time, and I can spot fake video pretty easily.
Well, Flight 93 was supposed to they were supposed to fake the crash into Building 7, and when something went wrong that they could not fake it, they just had to make that the fake crash at Shanksville, and then they were left with Building 7, you know, all ready to explode you know, it was ready to go, and they were ready to implode it. And, you know, the guys were standing around saying, what are we going to do? The public will never buy this, you know. And then one of the guys said, the public will buy anything we tell them. So just light it off, you know. Just have that thing disappear. They'll believe anything we tell them.
That's pretty much true, I suppose, isn't it? Because they
it is has a the great deal.
What's
not
that?
For me, but for a lot of the people.
What about the... I don't want to just beat this horse until it's glue, but it's like...
Hey, beat it. I'm ready to hear. You know, hand me the...
Well, they have a passenger manifest on these flights. What happened to that?
Well, yes. The captain signs the weight and balance and passenger manifest, and he passes that out the door as the last thing that happens, because what they want is a record of the fuel on board, the weight and balance, and the passengers in case anything happens to that airplane. And it's called the envelope. And after he signs that, the last thing that happens is the captain passes it to the head flight attendant, and he or she passes it out the door, and then they close the door. And that's how it works. But none of those flight envelopes have ever showed up.
Okay. Well, I don't know what to, I don't even know what to say at this point. I mean, we all, you know, it's like a... What do you say when the evidence is so irrefutable? It just doesn't add up.
Right.
I mean, well, I mean, you're not associated with this, but let's just go back to something you may not be entirely familiar with, that Waco thing that happened, when all of a sudden all these federal troops start shooting at this church down in Waco, Texas.
Right.
There are a couple of things that come to mind here. I didn't see any dirt spouts or bullet holes on the police cars or anything. I just saw all these agents and policemen out there just wailing with their automatics, just dumping their mags. And I'm going, okay, I don't see anybody shooting back. And then you see these SWAT guys on the roof. And one of them goes in, and then there's sort of this chubby boy in a SWAT uniform is yanking on the curtain. And then he kind of looks like he sprays his sub in behind the guys that just went in, and there's this cut. And the next thing you see is stuff flying through the wall from inside to outside.
That's
now, they're on the second floor, right?
Yeah.
And I'm seeing this TV station I used to work for at that time. It says live down in the bottom right corner, and yet there are edits in this video.
Right.
Exactly. So now the stuff comes through the wall, and the guy slides down the ladder. Well, later on, a lot of people, I'm happy to say, it's not just me, saw these videotapes that were going around that were not edited. And what you see is it appears that this guy threw something in the window behind them, which that would be fragments from what he threw in there coming out through the wall. My next question is, now wait a minute, if this is a local television station videotaping this, how do they happen to be that close? And how is it that they got that camera up to the second floor level, you know, and framing these people going through the window in it? It's just like...
Exactly, like, exactly.
I mean, was this like they borrowed the Hubble telescope or something for the day? I don't get it. I really don't. But then again, as time goes by, Captain Lear, I do get it. Okay, so an A-bomb was used to pay back Japan again. There was a funny photograph. This little temple was there. Showed I think it was Nagasaki, and it's standing there.
Yeah.
And then the next thing is you see all this scorched earth around it standing there. You seen the one I'm talking about? And then you see it again after the tsunami, and it says, my question is, what is this thing made out of?
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. John Lear is with us tonight. I am delighted to report, and we shall return with him and his very, very singular experiences. And, oh, man, how deep is it? We need waiters to come up to our armpits. See if we can get some of those. Special order, only for Coast listeners. This is Coast to Coast AM. I just can't let it go. A low-time commercial pilot hits a building 208 feet wide, dead center at 560 miles an hour in a plane he's never flown before. That does seem just a little fast for a commercial airliner to go that speed. John Lear says it's not possible. And actually, there were two planes, not just the one that hit the World Trade Center right in the center of the building. And there were a couple of offices, very special offices in those buildings that those aircraft landed. They were aircraft, maybe not airliners, but they were certainly aircraft. We're going to talk to him about everything. We'll stick to the terrestrial subjects first. But there's so much to discuss with John Lear tonight. Underground U.S. Navy submarine base in Nevada. Civilization on the moon. But before we get to that, I want to talk about TWA 800, and we will do that. Back in 2 minutes. This is Coast. John Lear, it's good to have you with us tonight. Let's go back just a little bit, because we've got some time here. And rather than just sort of putting you out on the clothesline by, you know, talking about these things that are difficult to believe,
yeah,
I just want to amplify a couple of things, and in the interest of credibility, because I see your track record. There's no way that a man with your credentials is just going to pull stuff like this just out of his hat. Yeah. Notice I use the word hat. So here's the thing. Let's go back to this thing with Japan. Are you asking me to believe that a nuclear bomb went off in the ocean as payback? I mean, is such a thing even possible?
Yeah.
That is such an enormous atrocity. I have no doubt that there are some evil little goblin kings and maybe even some queens out there that would do such a thing. But what suggested to you that this thing actually it was a real event?
The guy that wrote the whole scenario, he was there. He knew all of it that was going on. And I forget his name, but he used to still be on the web and outlined all of this in incredible detail, what happened. And my only, you know, question, if you don't believe it, just tell me where the 9.0 earthquake was. There was none. All the buildings are still standing. The only damage that was done was by the tsunami that was created by the atomic weapon.
And this was payback because Japan was providing Iran with nuclear material?
Yes, high-grade plutonium for their reactor.
Okay. I wonder if they've got a fire set yet.
A fire set?
Yeah, once they make the bomb, to actually let it off, you know?
Yeah.
Triggers and so forth. I wonder. And then going back to the remote-controlled battleship, and then bouncing from that over back to 9/11, do you think these were remote-controlled aircraft that did the deed in New York City?
No, there was no aircraft.
What were they?
What was what?
The aircraft that did the buildings.
How did they do it?
Yeah.
Well, those buildings were... disintegrated. Weapons used were using molecular dissociation. And what it is, it's a weapon fired from space that devolves or takes steel and concrete to its elemental form, its molecular form, disintegrates everything. And that's why there was so much dust around Manhattan, 3 inches of dust. All of that was the steel and concrete that was being molecular disassociated. And as you saw the first pictures after the collapse, there's maybe one story, maybe one and a half stories of debris. If it had been a conventional explosion, if it had been a nuclear bomb or some kind of conventional explosion, there would have been at least 15 stories of wreckage there, building materials. But there was nothing left. There was only dust, which got tinier and tinier. As a matter of fact, now it's 10 years later, and what happened is they didn't know, whoever they are, the power of the weapon they were using. And the problem was they found out that it was self-generating. And after they had eliminated everything, the process kept going on so that every time they tried to erect a steel or concrete building on that same spot, that it would turn to rust and start to disintegrate. So what you see there in the place of the World Trade Centers where they were is pools. And they've got water there, and they're building around it, but they're not building on top of it because it can't. Because that process of what they unleashed is still going on.
Well, then what did we see? If aircraft did not hit the building, what's the deal with the videotapes and so forth?
You saw the buildings imploding from the top, and as it fell, it disintegrated. Nothing got to the ground.
Well, I mean, what about the aircraft?
Oh, well, wait, about the airplane. That was video fakery. That was video inserted by the what do they call that, E-4, the doomsday airplane. They can insert video into any television station they want at any time they want. In several of the television stations, they inserted that video. It didn't always work correctly, but that's what it was supposed to look like. Now, I've said that there's a possibility that they used holography, and the technology there has been there for 20 years to use holograms, moving holograms that have that have light, sound, and you can see them on broad daylight. I mean, you don't need a screen or anything. You can project it into thin air, and I thought that might have been used, and I still reserve that possibility, but basically it was some kind of video fakery that the public was shown of those of the only airplane that we saw that went into well, let's see, building number the South Tower. That was United Airlines 175.
Well, this is unbelievable to me. It's just I feel a little subdued actually, because if this is true, then, well, I suspect we're in deeper stuff than we think we are, and most of us perceive that it's pretty deep already.
Well, there's a book out called Where Did the Towers Go, written by Dr. Judy Wood. And if you can get a hold of that book, it's about 600 pages. It's very, very detailed. It tells you exactly what I'm telling you, but in more detail. It has pictures, graphs, four-color pictures and graphs, and it tells you exactly what happened, and except that it doesn't make a decision on whether it was from space or where it was. She doesn't say it was a spaceborne weapon. She will not say it because she doesn't know. And but she tells you the exact method of what they used, and they used part of the energy to create this to create this force that disintegrated the buildings using Hurricane Aaron. And Hurricane Aaron had been carefully put together by HAARP and by other processes, and it was driven up the East Coast. It took 6 days, and on the sixth day, it was right there, 100 miles off the coast of New York, and they were able to use somehow the energy in that hurricane to pull off what they did. And then, of course, after this, the hurricane marched off into the Northeast. What's interesting is on the radio programs or the TV programs that morning, there was absolutely no mention of a hurricane bigger than Katrina 100 miles off the coast of New York. But if you get this book, it's called Where Did the Towers Go? Dr. Judy Wood lays it out, you know, perfectly. Anybody that I know that's read the book said, my God, that lays it out. That's it.
John, tell us some things about HAARP. Everybody talks about it, but nobody's really...
You know, I don't know a lot about it, but they can control the atmosphere. They control the weather. The Russians have the same type of stuff, and they can do the same thing. What they can do, basically, in controlling the weather, they can create hurricanes. They created Katrina, and you can see the radar recordings of that Katrina marching up towards the north in a straight line, dead towards New Orleans, and just splitting off to the veering just a little bit off to the right as it got to New Orleans and created all that havoc. But that that was somebody controlling that. They built the hurricane, and they moved it, and they put it where they wanted. Same thing they did with Aaron. And the Oklahoma City was a prelude to 9/11. The same damage that was created in the Mura building is what we see in the World Trade Centers 1 and 2 and the other buildings around World Trade Centers 1 and 2. You'll remember in the Mura building they found explosives wrapped around the the columns that did not go off. And I don't know what they were there for. I guess they were supposed to go off. But that was molecular disassociation, but just a very, very little portion of it. They didn't use it at full blast like they did on 9/11. But if you take a picture, as a matter of fact, Dr. Woods shows that in her book. She takes a picture of the Mura building and puts it right next to a picture from 9/11, and the damage is identical.
This is remarkable. All right, let me ask you this then. What about TWA 800?
Well, TWA 800 happened years ago, and it was the one of five airplanes that the U.S. Navy has been able to shoot down accidentally. The first was a TWA Constellation full of troops going to Vietnam in 1963. It was a Flying Tiger airplane. I worked for the Flying Tigers, went to work for them about a year after that, and I knew a lot of the inside stories on that. But what happened is they were on their way to Vietnam, and they were over Guam, and one of the Navy fighters went up and was just doing some practice air-to-air combat with this TWA Constellation, and one of the missiles got away from him and shot it down. And then, of course, the other one is the Iranian airline in the Persian Gulf that they shot down. And then what happened at TWA 800 is they had a submarine that was practicing shooting down a drone. And that drone was on the same direction and path as TWA 800. And for whatever unexplainable reason, the radar tracking broke track for a couple of milliseconds, and when it reassembled the track, reacquired the track, it reacquired TWA 800, and the missile, which was not armed, it was just a an unarmed missile, went through the from the first class. I think it was row 23 to 24 in first class, through to the other side of the fuselage, and blew it up. And, of course, they had SEAL teams there within 30 minutes getting every kind of possible damage that would implicate the Navy. The Navy, of course, turned around, headed for parts unknown. And, you know, people say, oh, no, that couldn't happen because, you know, the Navy, all those swabbies, they talk, you can't shut them up. Well, that's not true. The Navy is a very tight-lipped organization, and those guys aren't going to say anything no matter what they witness. But what they do is they split them up, and they send every different person that was on that submarine to a different place so that they cannot communicate or coordinate. But that's essentially what happened there. And what the government did to help cover it up, and that was Richard Clark's deal. They went to Boeing and they said, we want you to say that the center tank fuel was, there was a electrical arc which lit off the center tank fuel and blew it up. And Boeing said, no, we're not going to do that because, first of all, it's not, it can't possibly happen. There are no wires in the center tank. It's a closed pump. There are no wires that go anywhere near or being exposed to fuel. It cannot happen. And they said, they came back a couple of weeks later and they said, well, I'll tell you what, if you'll say that it was the center tank fuel pump, exposed wires, blew up, and it was only Boeing 747s 100s, which of course Boeing no longer produced. They said, right, only on 100s, we'll let you merge with McDonnell Douglas. And of course, Boeing had been trying to merge with McDonnell Douglas for 6 years, but they were tired up in the antitrust legislation, and they just couldn't get it through the courts. So at that point, Boeing said, yeah, yeah, we'll do that. If it's only the 100s, and then only the 100s, and then you'll let us merge with McDonnell Douglas. And then they went to TWA, and they said, and of course TWA knew the real story about the submarine. So they told TWA, if you'll keep your mouth shut, we'll give you a $368 million loan, but it doesn't have to be paid back. And that was the payoff to TWA to keep their mouth shut. And the only persons that lost in all this were the passengers. They got nothing.
What about, let me ask you this, and then we'll move on to some other stuff that's probably equally traumatic. What about that one, that Airbus that went down over Rockaway Park right after a 9/11?
That was a bomb in the left aft cargo compartment. And that's on several videotapes and the cameras that are around there. But what they couldn't have is a terrorist attack a couple of months right after 9/11, and after we'd made the threats that nobody will ever do that to us again, and we're going to do this and we're going to do that, and boom, happens again right there in LaGuardia. And so they couldn't afford that to happen, so they came up with this BS story about about the co-pilot using too much rudder to counteract the wing vortices turbulence and awake turbulence.
And, yeah, I heard that story too. You're supposed to start slamming the rudder pedals back and forth to make it straighten out or some nonsense.
And tore the wing off, and of course tore the vertical tail off. But of course that's BS. That didn't happen. What they had to do was promise the French something to make the French keep their mouth shut. And I don't know what that is. We'll probably find out someday what it was, but I don't know that now. But yeah, that was the bomb, and it was in the right aft cargo compartment.
John, I'm tempted to almost wax juvenile here as we come up to the top of the hour, and that is, you know, you see these old these films that were taken back in World War II, and you see a Marine out there just letting off with one of those Browning 1919s, just chopping up people. Like, I mean, they don't even look like people, just chunks coming off of people. So, I mean, I know these things happen, but philosophically speaking, I mean, if there's even any room for that left in this reality anymore, what is going on here? I understand that governments, kings, queens, parliaments, whatevers, have done horrible, ghastly, evil things that when you behold in their works, you go, oh, this is truly ghastly. But this seems just a little bit over the top to me. I mean, how deep is how bad is the world right now, John?
Well, fortunately, John, you and I don't have to worry about it, because the reason we're here on Earth is to mature our souls. And the people that made us, made humankind, put us here in this kind of prison planet so that we go through all these experiences and learn how to try and live with integrity and without envy, hate, or greed. And ours is not to worry about all this or try and rectify it. It's to live our own lives and to improve ourselves. Not always say, well, we got to stop this guy from doing that and that guy from doing that. What we're worried about is maturing our own selves. And when we finish with this tour, we go up to a fantastic place where they review all the good things and the bad things we did in our lives. And if we haven't learned to live with integrity and without envy, hate, or greed, it's boom, back down to Earth for another tour. If we did make the grade, then we go out to go in this wonderful, fantastic, limitless universe that's around us. Unbelievable, fantastic things that are ours for the taking as soon as we learn how to live with integrity and without envy, hate, or greed.
Excellent. So in the end, it appears that it really is all about love. Well, We're going to carry on with our most singular discussion with the one, the only, John Lear on the one and only Coast to Coast AM.